You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello, and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 2nd of February, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at Radio Aryan. Of course, since it's Truth Will Out Radio and it's Friday night, I have Dennis Wise with me, the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. Dennis, how are you doing today? This fine, almost springtime evening, I guess it is.
Well, we're all on spring, that's for sure. I'm okay, I'm just... We're working on part 11 this week, and I'm getting more and more convinced that we, as the white race, were used just like the Muslims are being used today in the past. I think the Freemasons have used the white race to go around the world and cause havoc, and just like they're doing with the Muslims. But like I said, it's not complete, and I'm still working on it.
Well, that's a good allegory. That's something I haven't actually thought about before, but it is very similar. Yeah, you're just using us as puppets. Using us as their shock troops to go into the third world and India and going into Syria and Libya. And then they use the third world as their shock troops to come into Europe and replace all of us.
Sounds feasible, doesn't it?
It does. It does. There are similarities to it. But we're going to be talking about part 10 tonight rather than part 11. How long do you think it's going to be until you've got that one finished, Dennis?
Difficult to say. I think a couple of weeks, I think, at least, knowing my track record.
Well, we've got lots of content. We've got comments and questions from part 10 this week, but we've also got some articles that we've been sent that I think are particularly interesting to do with Rudolf Hess. Maybe we'll get into that next week, some of that side of it. But we've got loads of questions that are coming this week, and also some really interesting information, I think, on Croatia. And these were left on the video, not the podcast, but on the video. I think there's even more on the podcast, the last one we did. Oh, that reminds me, I should apologise. We weren't here last week. I wasn't able to be here on the Friday night, and Dennis was unable to be here to pre-record an episode. So we put out a narration by Okama 10 in the chat room that I do recommend. It's about anti-feminism. It's an anti-feminism article that was written by a Bulgarian nationalist in the years leading up to the war, when they thought that the National Socialists were going to stay in power. So it's very optimistic, and it's very very interesting. It talks about how feminism was at the time, and after women had been given the vote, and what they were hoping for after that. But nationalist women. So I do recommend it. So go and check that out.
Can I just put in, Sven, just for a second, just reminding me, I watched a thing on TV this week. You know, the feminists have banned the women who, they come down with the dart players. They're not overly undressed, you know, they're dressed quite smart with a sash, but the feminists have now banned that. So where will it all end, I wonder?
Well, they've also banned them from the Grand Prix, haven't they?
Have they really?
Yeah, they banned the women.
Next.
yeah. Oh, it will be. Yeah, they banned the women from standing there holding the umbrellas at the Grand Prix. Well, it's like the other week with that President's Club thing and the Financial Times woman infiltrated it and made a big fuss about it. But not one of the women that were there, that were being paid to be there, has complained. Not one of them. It was all this Financial Times woman being insulted on their behalf. Basically,
you've got to draw the line somewhere, though, because it will never end. You know, you'll get to a point where they'll tell you what to wear.
Well, this is just it. If you allow women to have their way, they don't know any boundaries. They will just keep going and be as precocious, or whatever the word is, as they can be. The more you give them,
damn ugly.
Feminists are, yeah. Fat and ugly. E. Michael Jones has done a thing about that, the link between obesity and feminism. Brilliant, Professor Jones.
Well, they're all fat, but they're all ugly. I'll give them that.
Well, let's get away from feminism and let's get back to the content for tonight. Maybe we can do feminism on another night.
Okay.
I'm sure we do a good one on that. Okay, well, let's start with the comments here. And we'll just remind ourselves of the last video. It was all about Croatia and what happened there with your Ustasha. And this is a comment from Michael West. It was from 1 week ago. And he says, why does it matter which religion Adolf Hitler and the National Socialists liked or disliked? You all realise that if this Kalergi plan that is being perfected by the worshippers of the Star of David and their shills isn't stopped, that in just a few more generations, humanity will be nothing but subhuman, mongrel, ape-like creatures that only understand crime, violence, and welfare. So why is it so important to you, Dennis, to make people aware of Adolf Hitler's Christian faith?
The same reason it's so important to them not to let it slip or let it out that it was a holy war. Because once, if that ever came out and worldwide people found out that Christianity were fighting for survival in Europe from the Talmudic Jews, then that's going to be a huge shift in the diagram. And that is why, you know, they kept it quiet. That's why they controlled all the press, just like they did in the episode on South Africa, where in Cape Town, the British controlled all the press going out to Europe. So consequently, few people knew what was going on down there for real. And likewise, they did the same in Europe. And so this is why you get historians in America who just missed the boat completely with Adolf Hitler.
Well, it's important to get to the truth as well. I mean, this is called Truth Without Radio.
And, of course, yeah.
We don't want to be covering anything up. Yeah, this is it.
Actually, that episode is, I mean, it's had three dislikes, and I thought I'd get a lot more flack, but looks like they've all backed off with it, because it's one of the most powerful episodes, I think, on Hitler being for Christianity.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I mean, you remember when I first saw it, I was saying I think that was one of your best.
Yeah.
Easily one of your best. I would say that it is important, because it's only since we turned our back on Christianity that all these things have happened. It's since we turned our back on Christianity, we emancipated the Jew, we came up with feminism, we allowed women to have the vote, all the divorces happened, all the abortions have happened, all the promotion of homosexuality, the invasion of our countries, telling us that Islam is the same as Judaism and Christianity, as if Christianity is the same as those other two. Atheism, evolution, all of this has come about since turning our back on Christianity. So to show that Adolf Hitler was one of the only real, genuine Christian leaders in Europe, and it was a Christian crusade against the anti-Christian Bolshevik atheists, I think is really important. It tells us which side you need to be on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that people are being taught false history. And they're being taught false history for a reason. That's the problem.
Well, moving on to the next one. And this isn't a comment. This is just some controversy that was in the comment section. It was talking about the King James Bible and saying, well, the King James Bible, Freemasonry and inaccurate and all the rest of it. And, you know, I can give my own opinion on this from looking through Bibles. I've got a Dowry Reams, which is earlier than the King James Bible. It's the New Testament. And I've got the King James Bible as well. And it's useful to have both. But the King James Bible in itself, I would suggest, is the best translation there is, the first one, not the recent ones, because the first one had the Apocrypha in it, and it was just the very best of scholarship. There is very little censorship in there. There are a few times that maybe they put the wrong words in, but if they put their own words in, it's in italics. So if you see italics in there, that means that that's a new word that's been put in there. But with the King James, you can also get a concordance, and you can check the words out for yourself. So you can check out every single word that's in that Bible, and you can check out the Hebrew meaning of it and the Greek meaning of it, and see whether an alternative alternative has been put in there rather than the truthful one. And I would say since it is the word of God, but man is fallible and man is translating it, it is going to have mistakes in there. But I would still say that the King James is the absolute the best version that there is, the best commercially available version. And since then, they've tried to politically correct parts of it. Because don't forget, there was no political correctness in the 16th century.
I'm sure there weren't.
But there is now. There is now. So man is fallible. God isn't. The Bible is the word of God, but where it's written by man, you are going to find the odd controversial part. But then you have to study it to get to the truth of it. So if you're really into all of that, I'd recommend getting a Strong's concordance. But I certainly wouldn't say throw away the King James Bible or you can't trust it. Is it the most best-selling book of all time? Most read book?
Yeah, mine comes second.
Yeah, I mean, these are important works that everyone should read. Everyone used to have a Bible. That was the only book that people used to have years ago. It was the Bible, the family Bible, and they'd learn it all, you know, off by heart. And that was in a time when we didn't have all these problems that we have today.
Uh-huh.
Moving on, Ragnardur. 1 week ago, he says, I like this series just as much as I liked Communism by the Back Door and Adolf Hitler, the Greatest Story Never Told. But where do you get your inspiration from? I think I am not alone in wondering this.
Sometimes wonder myself, to be honest. But I think it all stems down from the original decision of whether when I had the opportunity to do it or not. I could have just left it and, you know, left all the controversy and just got on with whatever I was getting on with. But because of this massacre of my family there in Blueberg, I couldn't live with myself if I didn't tell the true story and mention that massacre as well, which is why I've dedicated Adolf Hitler, the Greatest Story Never Told, to the people who were massacred at Blueberg.
Yeah, it's quite personal to you, isn't it? Because of that, because so many of them were killed. I mean, you know, even if you're in Britain, you've got relatives that fought in the war, but it's not quite the same as, you know, having half the country massacred and stitched up. And, you know, we did that episode, didn't we? You talked about your father making his way across Europe. You know, I'd recommend people check that out. Go back in the back catalogue.
It's just the way they were tricked onto it. I mean, it were cowardly to start with. I know they had some fun and games with the Cossacks because they told the Cossacks they were going back. And they had to batter the Cossacks over the head with baseball bats. This time, they didn't use that. They said, this train is going to Italy, where you'll be safe. So everybody got on board with no weapons whatsoever. And suddenly they realised they're going east. And waiting for them is obviously partisans and Bolsheviks who are waiting to do what they do best, which is mutilate, kill and rape. And consequently, some on that train actually committed suicide rather than go through the genitals being mutilated, what communists do, but they were waiting for that to happen, and it did, and they wiped them out. And this was after the war.
And I would say they're relying on people like you to tell their story for them. They're relying on
this. Unfortunately, yeah, I drew the short straw.
Well, it's you're doing your duty for your ancestors, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it boils down to. I could do videos. I knew I could do videos, but obviously not. I didn't know I could do documentaries or not, but I knew I had a good shot at it.
Yeah, you could be making money doing them commercially, but you're spending your time doing them out of a sense of duty to your people.
Exactly.
You know, very, very honourable.
In the hope that somewhere along the line, somebody with some political power maybe sees it and can change the dimension of things. You never know. You live in hope. But if you don't try, it's never going to happen.
Well, that's the real hope, isn't it? That someone with money and power will watch them.
Obviously, if you watch the documentary, you can see. You can back it. You just look it up yourself, and everything fits anyway because there's no holes in it. Like the Allies' story of World War II, it's just as it is.
Yeah, so it makes a lot more sense than what we've been told. Mm. What we've all been told. Next one, Edward Crowley from 1 week ago. Edward Crowley. He says, "I'm sorry." For him. I'm sorry, but that's... He says, I'm sorry, but that's rubbish. Hitler did kill a fair few Jehovah's Witnesses in the camps for not saying Heil Hitler, so he really did persecute people on religious grounds. That bit is just a lie. I'm sorry. He's quite adamant, Dennis. Hitler did kill a few Jehovah's Witnesses. Why was that? What's that about?
Well, whether he did or he didn't, I'm sure I heard somewhere that the Jehovah's Witnesses were like some kind of cover for the Jews anyway. But, you know, that's just my hearsay. I don't know. I mean, you know, why, you know, the only reason that people were really shot were because they were aggravating communists in the camps, because we know from a couple of the Ernst Zundel interviews that what they used to do is they used to take all the food and you know, the tougher you are, the more food you got. And this was causing havoc. And also with these communists, they're not, you know, they're never going to lie down. And so they'll line up and, you know, against the wall and shoot them. So now, whether or not these Jehovah's Witnesses did the same, I don't know, you know. But he's just pulling something out there without any facts or any evidence.
Well, I would say that Jehovah's Witnesses, one of the ways that they operate, they go around knocking on people's doors and...
Well, they used to, didn't they? I think
yeah. They still do. They still do. But what they do is they take notes of all the conversations. So they're almost like a parallel spy agency. And that's what Hitler was worried about, that they had this parallel intelligence agency that was keeping records of all the people. That's what the concern was. It wasn't so much religion. It was the fact that you had this group of people that weren't answerable to the state, that were keeping records and spying on everyone. That was the point of it. And they could have been hijacked and used by the communists. They could have been communists. I think that was more the point of it. It wasn't because it was a religion. Because they never locked up all Muslims or locked up all Christians or even locked up all Jews on religious grounds, did they?
No, exactly. I mean, I think it's just a question, like I said, that somebody who is in charge of a country and has, you know, the love of his nation, etc., and wants to do the best for his nation, will not put up with any secret societies.
And yeah, that's
a prime example of what you just said, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very much like a secret society if they're keeping all these records, which I know that they do. Right.
Next well, I'd shoot him as well then.
Line them up against the wall. All the Jehovah's Witnesses. Well, they are a pain, but I don't think they quite deserve capital punishment.
Maybe not.
Moving on, AP1 from a week ago. He says the Holy Catholic Church, with its superstitions, corruption, and blasphemy against God, is the Antichrist. Mr. Wise is shilling for the devil. Freemasonry, Zionism, Judaism, Communism, Capitalism, Satanism, and Catholicism all secretly work together to bring about the Antichrist with its leader in Jerusalem. You've had to answer ones like this quite a few times, I think.
Well, I'm annoyed he hasn't called me the leader.
Yeah, you're
it's an insult. Well, like I said, I've had this a while lately, but like I said, this particular episode, I think, goes a long way to show exactly what Europe and the Catholic Church and Hitler and everybody else was trying to do. It goes a long, long way. And even the elite in the UK, even they could see. I mean, John Emery was one, for instance, who went abroad, you know, to fight for the National Socialists instead of fighting for Stalin and the Jews. We said this last week that they got silenced, you know, by obviously a powerful section, I believe, in the city of London who chose Churchill, and then all the media propaganda built Churchill up and the nation eventually had to gather around him and these elites got put in prison.
Well, I think also, I mean, a lot of that is Protestant accusations made against the Catholic Church, wasn't it?
That's true.
He was saying that the Catholic Church was the Antichrist, the Pope is the Antichrist, and the Protestantism has only been around for 500 years, whereas the Catholic Church has been around for 2,000 years.
It's the original Christian Church, so. Yeah. But it keeps getting infiltrated, and the reason why it keeps getting infiltrated is because it's an enemy of Freemasonry, and if you're an enemy of Freemasonry, it can't be that bad.
Yeah, it's clearly been infiltrated now, but I would say that it hasn't always been that way.
It certainly wasn't under Hitler.
Yeah, and as I say, I think there's a Protestant thing. I forget Two Babylons. I think the book is called, and it was a conspiracy type book, and it's trying to say that the Catholic Church is Babylon and the continuation of Babylon. But the Catholic Church and the people in the Catholic Church, they were the ones that understood the prophecies and how they pertain to what was going on. And this, the new evangelical style of things is trying to say that the book of Revelations is all talking about things that happen in the future. But the Catholic Church was saying, well, no, this happened in the first century. and the Book of Daniel, and all these studies that were done by the church fathers and by the monks and by the really intellectual types were done originally by people in the Catholic Church, and back when the Orthodox Church was a part of it as well. I mean, you don't have to call it Catholic; you could call it Orthodox. It's the same thing. It wasn't until the 10th, 11th century that the church split into Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholic. But if it wasn't for these original churches, you wouldn't even have a Bible. So much as you can criticise the Catholic Church itself, I think, you can't throw the whole thing away and say it's the Antichrist.
I was listening to this priest who I met years later on in the documentary, and he was giving a talk about Freemasonry and how it should be actually destroyed, wiped off the face of the earth. But then it went and said something like, today the EU is going to be based on National Socialism, just like Hitler wanted. And he went down the wrong track. So it works both ways, if you like. He was saying a lot of good things, and then he went and obviously he's been propagandized the other way.
That happens so often, doesn't it? People go so far and then they'll fall into the trap and start likening whoever it is with Hitler because Hitler's the most evil man on earth. So if you want to describe something as evil.
Well, like I showed, the Catholic Church itself was helping the National Socialists out of Europe. So how this priest doesn't know is beyond me.
Yeah, maybe he's just covering up, trying to be politically correct, like so many people are. Next one. This one's from Devil's Lover 261, and they say, "Why do you have such disdain for the Jews when Jesus himself was one? Somebody please help."
God, I hate it when people think Jesus is a Jew.
So do I.
He was nothing of the sort, and we've discussed this for many times, haven't we?
Yeah, you could say, well, he wasn't a Jew by religion, because rabbinic Judaism didn't exist until the 4th century. He wasn't a Jew by birth because he wasn't a Judean. He was a Galilean, so he wasn't a Jew by being a Judean. He wasn't a Jew by being a religion. He wasn't a Jewish citizen. He was
from the then, does it?
Yeah, he was from the house of David and from the tribe of Judah, and he was born in Galilee. So he wasn't a Jew. But really, I mean, all people have to do is just look at the modern day Jews and say, well, these are the people called Jews, is who we are now calling Jews. And they were not the people of the Old Testament. They are descended from the Pharisees, the people in the New Testament, the ones that killed Christ. And Herod is the one that killed all the babies, massacred all the innocents, and tried to kill Jesus as well. And he was one of the same ethnicity as these Pharisees. And these Jews today are descended from that group of people. So Jesus was nothing like them. That's why he called the Jews the devil.
Well, apparently there's a mistranslation on what Pontius Pilate said with the crucifixion. They put above his head Jesus, the King of the Jews. Well, that was a badly translated episode which fooled everybody, I believe, according to Benjamin Friedman.
Yeah, I think it was mocking him as well. I mean, that's mocking him.
Yeah.
Wasn't he himself calling him that? That was the Jews mocking him. That's the thing. I mean, I've just finished reading Flavius Josephus, the Histories of Judea, and it couldn't be any clearer that the people he's talking about are not Jews. They're not today's modern Jews. He talks about Herod and all the horrific things that Herod and his family did, and they were all inbred and killing one another, and how he put all his cronies in all the important positions, and how he bribed his way into becoming king by bribing the Romans. And that's typical Jewish behavior. But the actual Judeans and the Galileans, they were all really good people. They were trying to keep the laws of the Old Testament, and yet the people that were above them, the people ruling over them, the government, were exactly the same as our governments today. It really couldn't be clearer. I mean, it's a big book to read, but anyone that's should read it. Well, it's just, the same thing was happening back then as is happening now. But Jesus was certainly not a Jew. Next one, Gareth Bassett from 1 week ago. He says, "Dennis, what is your opinion of Hitler's table talks?"
Well, I've said often that any book what came out after 1945 couldn't possibly be pro-Hitler or Nazis. And this came out after 1945, along with all some other books. And like they tried with the Christianity, they want to demonize Hitler. They want to, you know, say that he wasn't a real Christian for the same reasons that I quoted early on. And this is all that the pagans have. It's all that they quote. And if you remember in the first episode of The Secret Masonic, I had Hitler giving a speech right at the back end where I took another excerpt from the same speech from a Jewish documentary, a pro-Jewish documentary, and they were quoting the words in that speech as a chancellor talking about give me 4 years, etc., and we'll build this nation up. What they're translating into is Christianity is like the child of communism and all this rubbish. And so they actually used that in a Jewish documentary over Hitler's voice. Yeah, the commentator actually wrongly translated it, which YouTube kind of put on the back burner now. I think it's banned from most countries, I think.
Well, it seems to me, any time I see quotes attributed to Hitler that really don't sound like Hitler at all, that's where it's come from. It's come from table talks, especially the anti-Christian bit. Now, I recorded a Daily Nationalist last week where I went through one chapter from Mein Kampf to see all the references that come from the Bible in it. And there's far more than one every other page. Now, somebody that knows the Bible that well that they just use it in their everyday talk when they're writing their book, they use allegories and parables and language that's all taken from it. That shows that Hitler was very, very well versed in the Bible. And he's using these allegories in very, very clever ways. And if you look at the passages talking about Christianity in Hitler's table talks, it's obvious it's by somebody who has very, very little knowledge of the subject matter. And that's what says to me it wasn't written by Hitler, because you don't suddenly become stupid. You don't suddenly forget everything that you've learned over the last 30 or 40 years.
This myth of him, well, he has to say that so that he could... You know, he was in politics, he was a politician, he knew, you know, how to get votes. All this, it's like he lived a complete lie all his life. I mean, I even found a clip of him, he mentioned Jehovah in one of his speeches. Far outweighs what pagans have found.
Well, he knew a lot more about the Bible than a lot of preachers today do. So, I mean, he had a very deep understanding of it, and that came out in his writing, in his language. Because he would just use phrases from the Bible in his everyday writing, which shows that he was very, very well acquainted with it. And the person that's writing his table talks...
Well, his mother was a devout Catholic.
Yeah.
He was going to be an altar boy, or he was that way inclined. So his early days were all steeped in Catholicism.
Now, he wanted to be a priest at one point. That shows you that he had this interest in it. But these passages in Hitler's table talks, they are written by an atheist. They're written by an atheist who is extremely against Christianity. It couldn't get further removed from the person that's actually writing Mein Kampf. But you wouldn't really know that.
Especially when they want to hide the fact that it was a holy war.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't know that if you were an atheist yourself, or if you were a pagan yourself, or if you hadn't read the Bible. You wouldn't realize these bits were in Mein Kampf.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think that's why not so many people pick up on it. Well, the next bit I've got here isn't actually a comment. It was some controversy that was in the comments. There were people that were writing in saying that if you want to be against the Jews, you've got to be a Satanist. And it's basically based on the fact that people think that the Jews worship the God of the Bible, which is quite clearly false, because Jesus says that the Jews are... of their father, the devil. They're the synagogue.
It's the same God as Freemasonry, isn't it?
Yeah. Satan itself means the opponent, the adversary, the antagonist, the person that you're against. And it's basically the Antichrist. It's everything against nature, everything that's evil. That's what Satan is. And the Jews are his representatives on earth.
So, well, I heard somewhere that Satanists didn't actually worship Satan. But then when I see them with that statue, what they built a couple of years ago, going to Lale, you've got a lot to convince me they don't.
Well, I think that what Satanists are against, they're against the modern version of Christianity that the Jews have given them. They're against the Christianity that the Jews have taught them is Christianity. That's what they're against. But they haven't looked far enough into it to realize that that whole idea of Christianity is it comes from Satan himself. It comes from the Jews. It comes from the devils. What you're taught in Sunday school is not what Christianity is about, because the Jews have taken over the church.
Exactly.
So advocating Satanism is just doing the Jews' work for them.
And paganism.
Yeah. Next one. Armin Arlert, fan from 1 week ago. He says, really been loving these videos. Excellent work. By the way, I have to ask one burning question that's been bugging me forever. Might not be your topic, though. But what do you think of T.E. Lawrence? So what happened with T.E. Lawrence, Dennis?
Well, from what little bit I know of him, he seemed all right. I think he was a champion for the Palestinians down there and was furious when the British went back on the word. But he was such an iconic figure that they really wanted him out of the way. Now, this guy said he felt that he'd been killed this certain way. But what I'd heard was that he took a Sunday drive a Sunday ride on his motorbike every Sunday, same place, same time. And one particular weekend, somebody's left a wire across the road and decapitated him, which suggests obviously that, he was murdered.
Well, I think that's what happened.
That's the story I heard, yeah.
Quite clear.
It's a bit like Patton in a way, isn't it? Once Patton realised certain things, he couldn't be allowed to go back to America because, he was too iconic a figure.
I mean, you can see the disregard that they have for human life. Winston Churchill was just going to off one of the, I think it was a British representative in Canada, and he was just going to kill him and make it look like the Germans had done it. And they were saying, why do you want to kill him? Didn't he serve you well? And it's like, yes, but he's getting near to retirement, so he's useless after that.
That's how to look at things, isn't it?
Yeah. No regard for human life whatsoever. So I can easily believe that they assassinated him. But I don't know that much about him myself. Next one. This is a good one for you, I think, Dennis, from Sandrominator from 1 week ago. Can someone red pill me on Germany-Poland relations at the time of the war? Why did the Nazis hate Poland? I cannot admire someone or an ideology that thought of my people as subhuman and deserving of extermination. So what happened there?
Well, again, this is a propaganda again before, during and after the war, where, they're saying that the Germans were the... we all knew who proclaimed to be the chosen ones. But the Germans were sort of singled out to be the chosen ones, who thought themselves to be, which was wrong. And so consequently, with Poland actually, up to changing the leadership, had quite a good relationship with Germany. But 1936, I think the leadership changed and then it went downhill from there. And there even, talk of an invasion of Germany. I think they did invade, part of where the border were, but were forced back at one point. Hitler all along knew that it was walking a tightrope with the Western powers looking to come into World War II, and so was looking for ways to negotiate. And I think the last 100 days, I think, which you can find on archive.org, goes through all the negotiations. It plainly shows that Hitler didn't want war, but wanted to negotiate both Danzig and the I think German problem. But consequently, what happened was Britain told Poland, look, if there's any trouble, we'll back you. France will back you. And for a long time, Hitler had to speak to England instead of Poland. That's how crazy it got, because Poland just ignored him. But eventually he couldn't take no more. And any leader, I don't care who he is, worth his salt, if he thinks that he's subjects are being slaughtered. For instance, if Mexico started killing Americans, Donald Trump wouldn't be 2 minutes going into Mexico sorted out, as we know. It'd be the right thing to do anyway.
That was the point, wasn't it? I mean, Poland was mistreating the Germans. After the Versailles Treaty, bits of Germany were given to Poland, and the bits of Germany that were given to Poland, the Polish banned them from speaking German, banned them from teaching German in the schools, banned them from having any good jobs, put loads of taxes on imports from Germany. And finally, once they got the blank check from Britain, Britain saying you can do whatever you like and we'll still back you if you can get Hitler to start the war or to invade Poland, then we'll start a war against him. Then they started physically attacking the Germans, and there was loads of refugees fleeing over the border that had all been beaten up. And I think there's a famous quote somewhere, isn't there, about the horrific mutilations that the Poles had actually done to these Germans.
I think, again, there were a communist insurgency or a Jewish insurgency there. All the press were winding all the Polish up, so that wouldn't surprise me if the Jews had took control of the press in Poland. So, you know, unfortunately, they don't get the story at all. They only get half the story.
Well, that was part of it as well, wasn't it? Germany had an agreement. They said, we won't, in any of our media, we won't run down the Poles and you don't run down the Germans. And Germany didn't run down the Poles, and the official Polish media was calling the Germans all these names and producing maps of Germany that included all the way up to Berlin as being Polish. You know, as if saying that we're going to invade and we're going to take over. And the Poles thought they were going to have Germany. They thought it was going to be really easy and they'd take it over. So it's not as simple as people make out.
No, well, I can remember when I first came out with the greatest story. I lost count of the people who left a comment saying, I've never heard of these ethnic Germans in Poland. Well, they weren't there because otherwise we're never going to tell that story.
Well, we've got a comment in the chat room here as well from No Darkies. He says, T.E. Lawrence was murdered. A young boy witnessed the black car drive to the accident, quote unquote, and he was debriefed. The British Secret Service murdered him because he and others like Chesterton wanted to meet Uncle Adolf. And he puts a link in there, which is more detailed, and it's www.criminalelement.blog. And it's the murder of Lawrence of Arabia. So look that up there, criminalelement.com blogs from No Darkies for more information.
Nice one.
Well, the next one is a similar subject, and this is from Sonder Commando. And he says, Dennis, what do you think about the Slav being inferior, which is written in Mein Kampf Stalag edition, page 737. And I've got the actual quote here that he's referring to. And it says, we are abandoning once and for all the colonial and commercial policy of pre-war days and are making a start upon the future policy of territorial expansion. But when we speak of new territory in Europe today, we must think principally of Russia and the border states under her rule. Destiny itself seems to point the way for us here. In delivering Russia over to Bolshevism, fate robbed the Russian people of that intellectual class which had once created the Russian state and was the guarantee for its existence. The Russian state, as such, was not the outcome of the ability of the Slav to establish a constitution, but rather a marvellous example of the constructive political activity of the Germanic element in a race of inferior worth. This is the way in which many mighty empires throughout the world were created. More than once, inferior races, with Germanic organisers and rulers as their leaders, became formidable states, and continued to exist as long as the racial nucleus which had originally created the state remained. For centuries, Russia has lived on this Germanic nucleus of its governing classes, but today, this nucleus has been practically exterminated, and the Jew has taken its place. I think that really explains it.
Sums it up, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he's saying there that the Russians started out being Germanic people, and they had a Nordic aristocracy, which, as far as I'm aware, that's what the old books suggest. They say that they had the people that were living in the Russian lands were unable to get themselves up to a high standard, which the Germanics had. So they actually sent to them and said, "Can you send somebody over to organize us so that we can have a country like yours?" And they did that. And the descendants, I think, of these Germanic people were still there at this time. I think it's something to do with the Mennonites as well. I think they were brought over to Russia at one time.
Yeah. Herzl's wife was a Mennonite merchant.
Yeah, there was a lot of Germans were brought over for that. And, I mean, maybe today it looks like he's using inflammatory language there when he says a race of inferior worth. But, you know, they were looking at all of the European nations and seeing which ones had created the most. And Russia, I think, well, at that time...
De Grelle said later on as well, towards the end, that he felt he changed his mind on you know, he didn't look at them as that badly by the end.
Yeah.
And that's in his book.
Yeah, well, he would have done if he saw them fighting. I guess what he's putting his judgment on is the level of standards or the level of civilization that Russia had at the time. And there's a bit in your documentary series, Dennis, where there's someone's talking about fighting there and saying, well, we just torched the houses because they were just like huts, just like sheds. Yeah, they weren't anything like brick-built houses like
French
we had in Germany.
Or British, yeah.
Yeah, they were just like sheds. So, I mean, he's basing his views on that. He's not saying they're subhuman. He's just saying that it's inferior. And judging by that, yes, they were inferior to the Germans. Living in a shed to living to a brick house. So it's not as negative as you would think at face value. Next one, Omega Pain from 1 week ago. If the UN is communist, then why does it consistently vote against the interests of Israel and the United States? So... does it? Does the UN consistently vote against Israel?
My reply to that, if I can remember, was when has the UN ever stopped Israel and the United States from doing anything that they wanted to do?
Well, I would say, well, maybe they might vote against Israel blatantly attacking the Palestinians, but Israel will still do that anyway. But exactly. They won't vote against Israel wanting America to attack Syria or Israel wanting America to attack Libya. Or Israel wanting America to attack Iraq. You know, the only time the UN will vote against the interests of Israel is just when it's too blatantly open that Israel is in the wrong.
Well, I think Israel actually bombed Syria on a couple of occasions, and nothing was said.
Yeah, they just go ahead and do whatever they want to do anyway.
Care blanche, yeah, it's as if they won World War II,
as we often say.
Yeah.
Jonathan Plummer from 1 week ago. He says, all Jews bar none are British by birthright. That's what the word British means. It means covenant men. The French are Rome and have always hated the British, just as the Pope still does today. Well, I think I can answer this first bit.
I'll let you answer this one. It's your ball, this one.
Yeah, well, he says the Jews are British by birthright. That's what the word British means. It means covenant men. It also means covenant men in Welsh. I mean, the word British, it doesn't, it was used by the British people before the Jews came over here and became British citizens. And some people say that the word British comes from covenant because of the covenant that was made with Abraham. And they say that the British people are descended from Abraham and not the Jews. Some people say that the word British comes from King Brutus, Prince Brutus from Troy. And when he first set foot in Britain, he peopled the country and he was our first king. And that's where the word British comes from Prince Brutus. And other people say that the word British is an Indian word. And we were the Western Bharats and the Indians were the Eastern Bharats. And you get the Mahabharata book, the great Indian book, the epic. And it's written Mahabharata and it's Bhrata. And with British, it's Briti. So, and the BRT bit is the important bit. BRT in Brutus or BRT in Brit. And you've even got it in Benai Brith as well. Those three letters together, it doesn't matter if it's British, Bharata, Brutus, it all comes from the same stem word, meaning covenant. So there's lots of different origins of the word British. And I think all of
them
have got some truth
called
to them.
Britain first Great Britain?
I think that was because we had Little Britain. We had Brittany as well on France. That was Little Britain, and the bigger Britain, which was over here, was Great Britain. That's the origin of that. But the word British, really, I think it goes back to Brutus. But it conveniently also means the covenant men, which, you know, it could be the promise to Abraham, but it certainly wasn't a promise to the Jews, because the Jews didn't come about until the mongrelization that occurred after the tribe of Judah came back from Babylon. And Prince Brutus was before then, years before then. But it's interesting, all these different origins of the word British, and they've all got a little bit of truth to them, I think. Even the Indian one, because we had trade routes with India, and I forget the name, L.A. Waddell, I think his name is. He's done a lot of work on this, showing the British links to the Phoenicians and to the Indians and to the Sumerians and Mesopotamia, and how there was like originally there was almost like the first world empire, and it was all connected up, and the West End was the British Isles, and the Eastern End was out in India. So and again, that's where you get Indo-European from. So you've got a link there between the people of India and the people of Europe, and this word British comes from it or has a link to it. Isis from 1 week ago. Again, he says, but didn't the National Socialists kill some Catholics along the way? We've covered that before as well, haven't we, Dennis?
Well, again, you know, it's just turning people who have told the truth would be really in shock. It's turning them away with these rumours, because, let's face it, he would have to kill half his cabinet and all his family if he wanted to kill Catholics.
Yeah, it was killing communists and subversives, and some of them may have been Catholics. That's the answer to that one.
I'm sure there were the odd one or two, yeah. But it's political, not religious.
Yeah. Tabor, 71, says, I thought I should share some hidden facts as well. Oswald Mosley was actually a Jewish Freemason. You can see him giving Freemasonic handshakes in the photos. Now, I would say he's reading too much into that. He said Oswald Mosley wasn't Jewish. He spoke out against the Jews. And sometimes people give handshakes and it may look like it is a Freemasonic handshake, the same as they may hold their hand up to their chest and it may look like they're giving a Freemasonic thing. But unless it's been specifically done, like it's a statue with them with that hand sign, or, do you know what I mean? Or deliberately doing
it. Yeah, well, actions speak louder than anything. I mean, these actions to me, he actually went to prison as well when the war broke out.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he was Jewish. Even if he was a Freemason, he certainly wasn't, I don't think, involved in the corrupt side.
Well, he may well have been a Freemason, but not all Freemasons know exactly what they're doing, do they?
Bogusvi, he says, but the Catholic Church was always multicultural and universalist globalist. Has the Catholic Church really been pro-European culture and DNA? And I would say, well, yes, for the first 1,000, 1,500 years. Christianity was just white people. It wasn't anyone else. It wasn't Negroes. It wasn't Chinamen. It was white people, European people. Next up, we have Blame Stosh from 1 week ago. And he says, wasn't Pavelich's government full of Masons and Jewish Christian converts and Catholics married to Jews? Joseph Frank, Ivor Korsky. Didn't they commit atrocities against Orthodox Christians? I would like to believe that they didn't, but I am not sure. So what's your answer to him, Dennis?
Well, I mean, they certainly wanted Croatia to be completely Catholic, and there were some forced conversions. And what they said to the Orthodox Serbs were, it's threefold. Either you convert, or you die, or you kicked out of the country. There's the third one. I can't remember what the third one was. So there was a ruthless streak down there where they wanted to change everything back to being Catholic. I can't deny that. But as far as the rest of it, I'm not having.
Well, I would say that, you know, you do want to have everyone in your country, in your nation, following the same religion. That's what keeps the country together. That's what stops the arguments. You're a much stronger force then. You can rely on each other that much more. So you can understand them wanting to have everybody part of one religion. That's why Muslims are so strong. And these Islamic countries are so strong and have their strong cultures because everybody follows the same religion. And it's not as if they were forcing them to follow something else. They were just saying, you know, you need to follow this strand of Christianity rather than that strand, this particular style of Christianity. So
it's a fraction of all these religions, which is the problem. Like you said, you know, where that being unified, then you're always going to have that problem. Maybe that's the way they were thinking. I can't say they were wrong.
I think they were. Yeah, I think they would have been thinking like that. And finally, we've got a fairly long comment here, and it covers some of the subjects just in that last question as well. It's particularly interesting. This is from Dinaric Tomislav, or Dinaric Tomislav, and he says about Pavelich's wife being Jewish. There is no proof of a mother named Ivana Hirschfeld even existing. There were rumours about Milan Nedic's wife also being Jewish, and I call bullshit on both. The rumour about Pavelich's wife, I think, originates from a lawyer named Ivo Politio. And he has a quote about Ivo Politio. It says, HDA Ivo Politio, File A. Stepinac, Archbishop Stepinac, in his sermons on the Feast of Christ the King on October the 25th, 1942. He alluded to Pavelich himself, whose wife seems to have been a Jew. Pavelich's mother-in-law was Jewish, Ivana Hirschfeld, as well as 12 other highest state officials, whose wives are either Jewish or Serbian. Also, Jura Christo, Katolika Kirka, I. Nezavizhna Drzava, Hrvatska, and I probably butchered those names. But then he says, he was defending Stepinac at one point and was considered very skilled at his job. He had very little time to prepare for the trial, and he only talked to Stepinac once, so he probably made a ton of crap up just to win the case. All complete bullshit. But there were Jews in NDH just like there were honorary Aryans in National Socialist Germany. In my opinion, both the Germans and the Croats were actually naive and didn't realise just how diabolical the Jews actually were. So I have to question the part in the video about the Croats being the most anti-Jewish. They were just like the Germans, except maybe even more naive. Jews.
Can I just stop you there for a second? When I was a child, I can remember going around Manchester with my dad, and at one point he pointed to Lewis's. And he said, they're Jewish. Now, I don't think they were not Jew-wise when he's saying things like that.
Well, this is after the war, isn't it? He's talking about before the war.
Yeah, but I just think that they knew what the Jews were all about. You know, I mean, there weren't many people could tell me Lewis's were Jewish then.
Well, I mean, obviously, the National Socialists were the most Jew-wise there is. But, I mean, today you could say that they were still naive in certain ways because they allowed Jews to be honorary Aryans. They allowed quarter Jews to marry white people. What he's saying is they weren't strict enough. And he comes up with his reasoning in the next bit. He says they were just like the Germans, except maybe even more naive, because Jews are paranormally evil, and here is an example to prove that. During World War II, this happened in the Jasenovich camp. Typhus was basically an anti-fascist crime. The information below is from a book by Mladen Ivicic titled Titos Jasenovich. Jasenovich was used to kill people after World War II and not during. In his book, he also provides official documents that show Hungarian Jews basically begging to be transferred from Hungarian work camps to Croatian ones because they were not happy with their accommodations there and thought that Jasenovac was basically like a hotel with a higher star rating than the one in Hungary. The first signs of typhus started emerging at the beginning of 1942, and the Red Cross visited Jasenovac on the 6th of February 1942. But the doctors there did something very strange. They lied and kept the typhus a secret. All talk about typhus was forbidden. This is why the epidemic started. And you may now be wondering, why on earth would the doctors do this? Well, most of the staff of Jasenovich were prisoners themselves. The Jews were the doctors. They knew exactly what they were doing, and the Ustashas were fed reports and stories about the prisoners having just a simple flu. So one part of the Jews were blaming the Croats for killing people who had typhus, and the other group of Jews were blaming the Croats for not treating the typhus patients. We also have information from Milko Riffer, in his book Grad Mertvir Jasenovac 1943, published in 1946. He was prisoner number 2376. And in his book, he noted that Jasenovac held only 2,500 to 3,000 prisoners. And because of this, his book was banned.
Surprise, surprise.
Fast forward to today, and we have empty graves filled with 12,000 gypsies. And that's not even counting the Jews and Serbs. I guess what he means by that is all the people they say that were killed there at Jasenovac when it only actually held 2,500 to 3,000 prisoners. And he's saying 12,000 gypsies they're claiming were there, not even counting Jews and Serbs. He says, to this day, many Serbs still repeat the debunked number of 700,000 Serbs killed, despite the fact that there is no evidence to prove that there was even one conflict or battle between Ustashas and Chetniks during World War II. There were Jewish partisans dressed up as Ustashas and Chetniks, but that's another story.
Well, that's one of Stalin's tricks, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And then he's got some final bits here, and I'm not quite sure the actual people he's talking about. Maybe you can let us know at the end. He says, do you think that Vlado Chernozemski was working for the Ustasha when he killed Alexander, born Velichko Dmitriev Kerin? Do you think Chernozemski is a Bulgarian surname? Kerin? What is that even? Was he Irish? Do you think normal white people change their last names? The king was killed by the Jews and MI6. Moza Pijade, a.k.a. the Yugoslavian Trotsky, was loved by Tito and spent 20 years in prison in the former kingdom of Yugoslavia. He hated both the Serbs and the Croats. King Alexander was killed because he started getting red-pilled on the Jews. Now, two things need to be stated. The official Jasenovac documents are conveniently stored in Belgrade. The official list of UDBA secret police is also in Belgrade. And Joshua Ambrose Tito's grave is in Belgrade. Hopefully one day we will be able to investigate that faggot's genes.
Well, that's funny enough because the king, Alexander Pavlovich, in his absence, was found guilty of being behind the assassination.
So is that what he's saying there? Seems to me to be saying.
Well, he's not saying it was just Stasha what killed him.
Right. So he's saying it was the Jews and the MI6, but it was the Stasha that got blamed for it.
Pavlovich got in his absence and was blamed for it. Yeah.
That's interesting. All these exaggerations that have been made about the camp there as well.
Yeah, it's sort of Jewish as well.
Yeah, Jewish doctors. Saying that there was typhus because they wanted people to die of it.
Yeah, I can believe that. It's amazing how their mind works, and it fits into that category.
Yeah, I can easily believe that. But you can see that's why he's saying that the Croats were naive. I think he's just saying with hindsight you can criticize all these people for not being awake enough, but just look at the way we behave today.
Yeah, well, the problem with Britain is we don't realise that we've been occupied for 300 years now, you know what I mean? That is a problem because, we go around unaware that we're all being manipulated. I mean, you don't and I don't, but certainly the majority of the British.
Well, hopefully with podcasts like this, we can help to wake people up and realise the truth of what's going on with Truth Without Radio. So, Dennis... Thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with another Truth Without Radio for you, so we hope you all have a great weekend ahead of you.